I'm delighted to be joined on the line by Geraldine Byrne. Geraldine's family has been being affected by Huntington's disease. Good afternoon, Geraldine. How are you?
Hi, how are you? Not too bad, thank you.
That's great. Now, I don't know, did you hear us talking to Patricia earlier on? She kind of gave us an idea what Huntington's disease was and how what it was about. And I suppose this is how it affects the family, and which is the most important thing of all.
Yeah.
How did it affect you, Geraldine?
Oh, well, I was only 16, I think, when my dad was diagnosed, and it was very little known about it then, like. And I was the second eldest of nine, so we were kind of in limbo. Nobody knew really what it was.
Right.
It was just this horrible impacted everybody, like. So we knew then, after a while, we got in touch with the Huntington Association and that, when he was diagnosed, and they told us exactly what it was about, and they had said that there was going to be trials and this, that and the other, and that the younger kids contacted us. There's a 50-50 chance, like, and if the younger people in the family got it, that they'd probably be fine. But, I mean, I've buried four siblings in the last 6 years.
With Huntington's?
With Huntington's.
Really? My God.
Yeah.
There's so...
More.
I can't. There's nothing I can say there, really, Geraldine.
No.
I suppose we'll just go back to the start. When you heard about your dad, I mean, you were young at the time, so that must have had a major effect on you, even though you weren't quite aware of the disease and probably the outcome.
Oh, the youngest were only four, like the twins.
Yeah,
and one of them has passed since, and the other boy has it. But it's just, it changes your whole dynamic. Like, you're watching somebody disappear in front of your eyes before ever they pass, like, because it starts off and they look like they're drunk, or, you know, but they're all different. Like, every one of my siblings is so different. It seems to affect the girls. It was harder on the girls than the boys.
In what way, Joe?
On their bodies, maybe their movements and
right. And
the cognitive, like, you know, the cognitive memory and the depression, and that kind of went more rapid through them, if you know what I mean. Like, you're kind of looking at them one day, they're there and they're perfect, and the next day their balance is gone, and then their speech is gone, and their swallow's gone, and they end up literally, you know, vegetables. And for the want of a better word, they kind of starved to death, or an infection or whatever, you know. And in the finish, like, one of the girls, the youngest girl, had the peg in for 10 years. She got it in when she was 30.
Right.
Oh, no, sorry, she did 9 years. She died at 39. And that was her choice, but the other three decided they weren't having the peg in because my dad had the peg in.
And just for our listeners, can you just tell us what exactly the peg is? And
the peg is a tube into the stomach.
Yeah.
But it's so hard because they're so young. And my mum died then 22 years ago. Like, she was only 53, so I was the oldest girl. So obviously I had to take on board the siblings' care and that.
Yeah.
So it's very hard to get help from. It's very hard to find a doctor that understands what's going on. Now, I have to say, the doctor that has dealt with me down to the years, she's my own doctor as well, Dr. Cheesy in Clonmel. She is amazing because she has seen it firsthand now and dealt with three of them. You know what I mean?
Yes.
But when I was going to the hospital with them, when they'd have infections and things, and they'd be saying, oh, the nurses even didn't know. They'd be saying, well, what can we give her this? Can we give them that?
Right.
Oh, and then also there's no... The financial help is very hard to get because every time you try to get them on disability and pensions and things, they're entitled to. They keep saying, well, they're so young, they're not 65. You know, they're not old people, so it's very hard.
So as well as a disease being thrown at you, you had a lot of these obstacles from trying to care for them, and all these kind of things were thrown at you as well.
Yeah, very much so. And there's nothing to help you there. Then when you have a disability and that happens, and we were very, very lucky and very fortunate because we were from a small village originally, and the community rallied round after the second funeral and fundraised for us. And other than that, we would have been in dire
straits. Really? It actually had to take that. Right, you know, you're the shock of, first of all, your dad, and then having to realise that some of your siblings were going through the same thing again.
And sometimes they don't comprehend that they're sick or they're in denial, and it's very hard to help them or very hard for them.
And is that after they had been diagnosed that they can't comprehend it or?
Yeah. Exactly, yeah.
Or, like they just
won't accept it.
Yeah. Well, I suppose, yeah, it can be very hard to accept something like that when you know, when you probably know the outcome yourself.
Yeah.
And I suppose that is.
I know I went for the test myself a couple of years ago, about 6-7 years ago. And my own kids were getting to an age where they were older and maybe having a family of their own that wanted hanging over them. And I mean, it's a wicked hard process to go through.
Yeah, because there was actually a question that came in there, again, wondering, or a listener asking why family members had to go so much counselling and all that kind of thing for months to try and get a diagnosis, or a test, I should say.
Yeah, you can't. You can't. You have to, like, it takes, I started in January, I didn't get my results until September. I had to see psychologists and counsellors and go for blood tests, and then it goes to England, and it's a hard process. But I mean, the day I got my results, I just cried my eyes out, and you couldn't celebrate. Like, I was delighted.
And I presume you tested negative for that.
I was negative. Yeah.
Yeah. Negative. So, so that meant your family, your own kids and that were safe. Yeah.
They're safe. It doesn't skip.
Right.
But I mean, it just means people don't know enough about it, and I know motor neuron and Parkinson's and all those other illnesses.
They probably would be more common ones, yeah.
Everybody knows if you say it, but if you say Huntington's, people say, what is it? But
yeah.
It's like motor neuron, Parkinson's and dementia all rolled into one. And it starts so young in some of them. My youngest sister was 19 and then her twin was only diagnosed 3 years ago.
Really, yeah. And I mean, and even at that age, I suppose it's a little bit rarer, I think, isn't it, to have it that young?
Yeah, it can be. It can be now, but I mean, I find the association has been fantastic. I have gone to meetings and met other families and that. But there's kind of a stigma attached to it for a long time because of the symptoms. I mean, there was an instance going back a good few years ago, my youngest sister went into a pub and she wouldn't be served because they told her she had enough drink or she was drunk.
Really, yeah.
No matter what her friends said to say, no, she wasn't even drinking. It wasn't believed,
And, I mean, that must have been very hard on your sister as well.
Very, very.
And, I mean, at that stage, she knew herself what was happening and...
Oh, God, yeah. She knows everything. And she was able to say, look, I have Huntington's. But, nobody knew what Huntington's was. It's just as if she was, making something up on the spot.
Yes.
That way. And I mean, the trials are very important, but it's because people don't know so much about it, there's very little financial support there. And the fact that the trials are coming on board now, the Huntington's Association, that are going to need financial support from the government and all when these trials come in to help families. It's gone through two generations of my family now, and there is a lot of the third generation at risk.
And yeah,
there's 5 or 6 kids there at risk now, and it's just horrific to think that, you cope with what you're coping with now, but you'd be looking at the kids and thinking you just couldn't do it again.
I mean, you're after more than your share, as I say. You're after seeing two generations with the same thing, and to go through a third generation again would be extremely difficult.
Third generation would be just devastating.
Yeah,
devastating. It's bad enough as it is, So. It's really, the reason I'm speaking today, because Tricia asked me, is because I want to talk about Huntington's. I want people to know about Huntington's. And I want the government to know about it. And I want, there's a list of 12 long-term illnesses. And epilepsy, diabetes, they're all on it. Huntington's is not on it. So say I had a situation where one of my siblings was getting bed sores, had to get bandages. But had a medical card, but it wouldn't cover him. So I had to go and get hardship forms in the clinic and everything. And it made me angry because people with diabetes and all that, they get everything. But because it's not well known and because it's not classed as a long-term illness, you're not entitled to all these extra things that they need.
Yeah, that's amazing. When you see that that it's a terminal illness, like, you know, and that's it, whether you like it or not. I presume that there's no that's the end game here, isn't it? I mean, you know, there's no good or happy ending to it.
No, there's no good or happy ending to it. As I said, people say to me, like, my God, how do you do this, that, that, but you actually take day by day, and then you kind of, you grieve the whole way through. As Corinne, they lose something. By the time it comes to the end, you release them, and it's not that person anymore, you know, that way.
Yeah, because, I mean, like, it's very fine. It's extremely difficult for the person going through this, and for what's happening. But for someone like yourself, who lost her dad and a couple of sisters, to watch it happening, and be completely helpless, really.
You can only try and do your best for him, like, to be there for him and help him. And I mean, I found it was very hard for me because, as I said, I was older than them all. I'm 10 years, 13 years older than the youngest girl.
Yeah.
Right? So there's a lot of guilt. Okay, I'm glad I don't have it. But there's a lot of guilt too, that, you know, how I escaped. You don't celebrate the fact that you don't have it because you're looking at the rest of your siblings.
Yeah.
Before your eyes, you know what I mean?
Yes.
But I was so glad now that this has been brought up today on the radio station, and hopefully...
No, I like, it is great, because, I mean, it's from listening to stories from the likes of yourself who have gone through it, have been deeply affected by it, you know, that's what hits a chord with people, you know.
Yeah, we're very hopeful that there's something around the corner, but as I said, the financial support is going to be needed.
And like, that's I suppose that's my next question, Geraldine. What would you like as someone that has gone through all this, what would you like to see the government put in place, or what would you like, what's your message out there to people?
Well, I think maybe there should be somebody, there should be somewhere, like, all my siblings ended up in, well, about one, ended up in nursing homes.
Mm-hmm.
Now, they were all very young, in their 30s. And one of my brothers was only 24 when he went into a nursing home. He went into a psychiatric hospital first because there was nowhere else to put him, and then put him in a nursing home. But they're young. There's no facilities there for young people with illnesses, where, like, they still have a fairly good quality in the beginning. They're able to communicate.
Yeah.
But they're in an old folks home. There's no facilities there for young people with illnesses that they could still enjoy a little bit of life. And plus, I'd like the government to have some kind of expert, maybe, in Huntington's that could speak to the doctors and GPs around the country, that they haven't a clue what it is like. There's nobody talking to them. There's nobody giving a talk on it or explaining the situation. So, like, anytime my siblings in the beginning got sick, now, I mean, they're well used to me now in Clonmel at this stage, I think, and my own GP, as I said, is amazing. But, you know, they don't know, and it's not their fault. They're not being told. Like, there's no education there on it.
Mm. Yeah.
And it's actually the families that are telling the doctors.
Yes, and that is worry. And especially when Patricia was telling me that there's probably around 700 sufferers here in Ireland, plus the potential up to 3,000. You know, so that is surely big enough for the government to stand up and take notice of. But like everything else, it takes the likes of yourself to come out there and stand up and start shouting and making noise. And, you know, this is what we need. And I suppose that's what you're doing here today. You know, so that's probably the start of it.
Later now for my other two siblings that have it now, you know. But like I said, I have nieces and nephews. I have cousins. They're all affected.
Yeah.
Do you know, and it's very hard with young children then as well, having to live with looking at their parents. Like, my youngest brother has three younger kids, and they're just looking at him disintegrate in front of him, like.
Really, yeah.
Them, you know, and it's so hard on them as well. They're young teenagers and young kids, and their whole life is what's happening around them, you know. They've seen so much misery in the last few years. And
yes.
And they've seen it already. It's not like it's something that you don't know what's going to happen to them.
They know exactly. They know what is happening, and that's the sad thing about it. Looking at someone that's supposed to be strong and invincible, to see that happening, it must be horrific.
But look, it is what it is, and I know there's people worse off somewhere around the world and different things going on. But I just think that there isn't enough support there. Only for Patricia and Liz and the Huntington Association are amazing. They are such a support to families. In every way that they can help, they do. But, like, their hands are tied so much. Huntington needs to be looked at by the government and some experts. And, you know, Niall Pender is doing great work above in Dublin.
Yeah.
And really trying. So I'm just hopeful that, that we're hoping by 2022 maybe there might be something there. So I'd be just hoping, to talk about it, that I wouldn't ever be talking about any of my nieces and nephews being like that.
Well, that would be great to see. But you're fair play to you for coming on and talking to us about it and giving us...
Thank you so much.
And giving us an idea of what it is like. I'd love to say something that, I can't.
There isn't anything there, but hopefully there's good things around the corner, and hopefully the government will step up if something comes on board and there's finance needed for it. I hope that they will.
Gerard, it is up to, like yourself there, just doing what you're doing now, that is making a difference, and that is getting a message across to people. And all it takes is one person to get a ball rolling, and you never know what will happen. So, Geraldine, thank you very much. It was really a pleasure talking to you. Thank you very much indeed.
Thank you.
Cheers. Bye-bye.